been an exciting week. We're continuing to learn how the building works and how the facilities operate and see if some of the things we designed on paper actually work out in reality. We had another beautiful wedding here yesterday. One of our young couples grew up in our church, part of our church. His mother and I figured out yesterday that I met him when he was 4 years old and never anticipated meeting him at 4 years of age, that we would become good friends discussing knife collections and then would be standing right here performing his wedding ceremony yesterday. It was beautiful. It was absolutely great. The last 2 weeks, we've hosted over three family dinners. When a family goes through a funeral, we offer them typically a place for all their family if they've come in from out of town together. And when we designed the lobby area, we designed it as a gathering place. And that's actually what we call it on the blueprints. It finally says gathering area. We designed it as like everything else, multi-purpose. And so we've been doing those dinners out there, and it's actually gone really well. They've really been able to minister to those families. Speaking of funerals, it was interesting this week. Continue to pray for Carrie. I'm doing great. I'm not in that much pain most of the time. But the awkwardness of being in this brace and the absolute horror of not being able to drive has really impacted me, but it has more so impacted Carrie. She's having to drive me everywhere. She's coordinating rides with Steve and with Erica to get me to work and things like that. But I had a kind of a fun moment this past week. The funeral Friday was a man who'd been a part of our church for years, grew up here in Tomball, actually born in Hempstead. And then his service was Friday, and the funeral home, Klein Funeral Home, we work with them a lot. A lot of their directors are close personal friends, and I was talking to the funeral home director, and he said, "Hey, look, I'll just come down and pick you up." And I thought that was great. I'd give Carrie a break. He can come pick me up. And Carrie asked me to message him back and say, because we live in an older neighborhood, and as a result, it's an older demographic in that neighborhood, and we all tend to talk a lot about one another. So Carrie's idea was that I message and tell them, "You come pick me up, but come pick me up in the hearse. Back it into the driveway. Give the neighbors something to talk about." So it'll be fun. Presley, you can share that at school, that the pastor was going to have a coach come pick him up. They didn't come in the coach. I was slightly disappointed, but they did. It's kind of standard for Klein. Everything's Cadillacs. And so they did come pick me up in a very big Cadillac. I don't know which model it was. I'm not that familiar with that particular brand. And they happened to time it right at the exact same time. I was in the front yard. A long guy was there, and I was talking to him, and we were visiting, and then this big old Cadillac pulls in. He gets out of his, of course, he's in a full suit, and gets out, walks around, opens my door for me. And my lawn guy's standing there with a weed eater going. I thought, he just thought I was a preacher. CIA, something like that, Secret Service. But it's been a fun week. So just thank you for your prayers, and the things that are taking place are really good. We're still getting acquainted. Let me take a moment just to thank Livestream. You guys are stuck with us. This morning, you have brand new cameras. These are new 4K cameras, so everything should be nice and clear. But we've had a rough few weeks getting everything worked out. Livestream has its own mixer now. It has its own part of AVL in the backstage area. You guys have been patient as we've struggled with that. I think we're on target now, hopefully, and so everything seems to be good. So thank you for that, and thank you for always being with us. We have so many people that watch our live stream every week, and we're grateful for that. Actually, let me do the thing that they always do on YouTube for just a second. You guys actually help us if you will like the video. I know it sounds weird, and I know every influencer you've heard says, "I like the video, subscribe." It actually does make a difference on the YouTube algorithm, and so you'll help us if you will like that video, and of course, subscribe. And of course, tithe. No, I'm kidding. We're not going there. Let's talk about what we are as a church. We're going to do that for about the next 6 weeks. This will lead us into Thanksgiving. And then as hard as it is to actually believe and process, Thanksgiving will be here. And we are in the middle of Christmas. And so we're going to spend this next 6 weeks. We're working on this as a staff team. So this is a collaborative project of teaching where we're going to look at who we are. And we're going to look at how that's defined in statements we have, primarily our mission and vision statement, but also our core values. But this is not an academic exercise. This is not just, okay, we're going to teach you. We want you to memorize this. We do actually want you to memorize it. But, you know, it's not an academic exercise in that regard. This is going to be more, in a very real sense, sort of emotional and sort of grasping what that looks like on a daily basis. So the mission vision statement is inviting others into a life-changing relationship with Jesus, one conversation at a time. It is a simple rephrasing of the Great Commission where Jesus told us to go and make disciples of all nations. But we're going to talk about how that plays out. We're going to look at what it means to invite somebody into a life-changing relationship, what it means to have that life change when we're invited into that relationship and we have that new relationship with Jesus that changes our life. What does it mean to have that conversation? And that's, as you can see on the screen, that's the title of this particular series, One Conversation. How do we have those conversations? What takes place in those conversations? What does a conversation look like? And why do we add this slight little phrase on the end of it at one time? One conversation at a time. What that means and how we live this out on a daily basis. So we're looking at an example of one of these conversations. In John chapter 5, we see Jesus initiate and execute one conversation. You know, this gives us some insight. It gives us insight, like I said, not in a real hyper academic fashion, but just an understanding that what God's asking us to do is just live out our faith in a normal, regular pattern that gives us the opportunities to share that faith with others. And one of the very first part in verse 1 gives this description of what's taking place. But because this is a narrative, let me just take for a moment, let me pause for a moment, and let me just read the story to you. John chapter 5, verse 1. After this, cool fact though, I won't do this on all of it or we'll never get out of here, but cool fact though, after this is actually another conversation. It is probably the equinox. It's probably the pinnacle, probably the greatest example of Jesus having conversations one-on-one with people, inviting them into life change. And that is a woman who shows up at the well and Jesus asks her for a glass of water. And in that context, begins to explain to her how she can have eternal life. Life change takes place and she's so excited. She goes back and tells her entire village. And the next thing we know, all the village is out there meeting Jesus, having that life change experience. That's the after this. We will look at John chapter 4 over the next 6 weeks, probably multiple times actually, because it's such a classic voice. This is the story after that. So this is kind of the epilogue, so to speak. After this, a Jewish festival took place. We don't know what it was. And Jesus went up to Jerusalem. By the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there is a pool called Bethesda in Aramaic, which has 5 colonnades. Within these lay a large number of the disabled, blind, lame, and paralyzed. Now I'm going to read the next verse that's probably not in your version, whether you're looking at hard copy or digital, because verse 4, Bible scholars believe that's a later addition that was added in later by scribes and people copying the text because they wanted it to make sense. That does make sense, and it does make sense to understand the myth and the superstition that this particular man had put his faith in. That superstition is simply this. Where all the people were paralyzed, they waited for the moving of the waters. From time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. The first one into the pool after each such disturbance would be cured of whatever disease they had. If you don't have it in the text, it's down in your footnotes that I wanted you to have that context. Verse 5, we're back to the actual scripture. One man was there who had been disabled for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and he realized he had already been there for a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the disabled man answered, "I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I'm coming, someone goes down ahead of me." "Get up," Jesus told him. "Pick up your mat and walk." Instantly, the man got well, picked up his mat, and started to walk. Now, that day was the Sabbath. And so the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "This is the Sabbath. The law prohibits you from picking up your mat." He replied, "The man who made me well told me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" "Who is this man who told you, 'Pick up your mat and walk?'" they asked. But the man who was healed did not know who it was. Jesus had slipped away in a crowd that was there. After this, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well. Do not sin anymore, so that something worse doesn't happen to you." The man went and reported to the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. Let's walk through this story as Jesus invites someone into a life-changing relationship. They experience that life change, and Jesus has this life-changing conversation with this man. Now, if you're looking at the bulletin when you came in, several of you have them with you to take notes on. Don't panic. There are 8 points. The office already told me it was a little frightening to publish 8 points because everybody wants to go to lunch. We will get out on time. That's just structure to help you take some notes and to help kind of walk through this passage and pick up the different nuances that we're going to look at in this passage. And so don't panic. You can also find it, live stream folks, you can find it on the YouVersion Bible app in the events section under the live stream, and you can find those notes as well. Here is a key piece to understanding having this one conversation. Jesus went to where the people are. The description is given. There's a festival taking place. We don't know the details of all that. We know which region. We know which section of Jerusalem this area is at. It's been excavated today. You go to Jerusalem today, you can see it. We understand the area. But here is the significant part of verse 3. Within this area, a large number of the disabled, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed stayed there. Jesus went to where the people are. This is critical to understanding Christianity. There is no other religion in the world where God leaves his perfection to be with the imperfect. Yes, if you've read it in high school, you understand some bits and pieces of the stories of Greek or Roman mythology. Yes, those quote-unquote gods are always coming to earth to create mischief, to seek out their own pleasures, to generally basically do whatever their base desires are. They never came to earth to rescue humans. They never came to earth to restore humanity, to restore creation. The gospel, the good news, the message of hope that's found in Jesus is God coming to where we are, God leaving his perfection but not losing his perfection to be with us and to live with us in our imperfection so that we might experience life change, so that we might have the opportunity to know him. If we're going to have one conversation at a time, we have to be where the people are, and we have to go where the people are. And the easy part of all this is, for the most part, we're already doing that. For the most part, we're already in those venues. We're already in those locations. You're already going to go to ballparks. You're already going to go to stadiums. You're already going to go to school. You're already going to go to work. You're already going to be in the neighborhood. You're already going to go play pickleball. You're already where the people are. You're already at the store. You're already in your office. We're where the people are. The church is a mobilized people. We are not a refuge. We are not a sanctuary. We gather to restore and to encourage and to recharge, but we are meant to go, just like Jesus did. If we're going to invite people into a life-changing relationship, we have to be where the people are. But it's so much more than that. If you look at verse 5, simple statement from John is this. One man was there who had been disabled for 38 years. It's not just the crowd, but it's filtering as you look at the crowd, as you're in the crowd, as you're participating with the crowd, filtering through that and seeing the one. Inviting people into a life-changing relationship with Jesus, one conversation at a time. It is the opportunity to seek out and to see and to filter, which has to be a deliberate and intentional act. Some people are wired more compassionately than others, and they might notice somebody who's in need. But the problem is, the needs we're talking about are not visible and physical like this man's needs. The needs are needs of the heart. The needs are needs of the soul. And we learn very, very quickly how to hide the needs of our soul. And so we have to be sensitive, and we have to watch, and we have to listen. And we have to interact. We have to go where the people are, but we need to find the one in the crowd. that needs to meet Jesus. And we find that one. And when we find the one, it's not just an immediate, and I think this is where most of us get afraid. I think everything I've said up to this point makes sense. If you're at a ballpark this afternoon watching the kids or grandkids, that makes sense. I'm at a ballpark. I see all the people. I end up in a conversation with a guy over hot dogs. And while I'm talking to him, I begin to find out that he's just been laid off from his job. And I begin to see his needs. And I begin to understand, here's a guy who needs compassion. Here's a guy who needs somebody to listen to him. Here's a guy I can invite into a life-changing relationship. All of that makes sense. But what frightens us typically is that sense of confrontation, because it's not just a conversation for conversation's sake. It is a conversation for the purpose of inviting into life change. And that becomes scary. Do I know enough? Do I have enough information? Am I qualified enough? I'm not a pastor. I'm not a Bible student. I'm not a scholar. All I know is Jesus changed my life. That's honestly all they need to know. But we don't begin at that point. We begin at what's called, it's been called, a term designed back in the, probably created about the early 1990s. We begin with felt needs. Jesus looks at the man in verse 6, and he asks him simply, do you want to get well? Now, I am just cynical enough, and I am just wired enough that direction, that my inclination, even when I read this, even when I just said it to you just now, it's like, what is the problem? Isn't that obvious? I am in a place that the only reason anybody is in this place is because everybody's paralyzed, everybody has an illness, everybody's disabled. Nobody wants to be in this place. And I have been in this condition for 38 years. Yes, I want to get well. Isn't that obvious? But Jesus is asking a pointed question to take the conversation to a completely different level. It begins at this point. Yes, of course I want to get well. Yes, of course, I need a job. Yes, of course, I need to work things out in my family. Yes, of course, I need to struggle and work through and discipline to accomplish my school goals. Yes, of course, I have that need. It's what we feel. It's what seems like the highest level of priority. But before we're done with this story, we're going to see that in reality, felt needs are not the highest level of priority. They just seem to be persistently obnoxious enough to occupy the majority of our time and our thought. You can't stop but thinking about it. I mean, in reality, my greatest need isn't to be out of this brace. But I'll tell you, for the last 3 weeks, there has never been a moment, never been a moment that I haven't wished I was out of this brace. I got 3 more weeks to go. I see the doctor in 2. I'm hoping, as my old buddies used to say back in the day, that I am given time for good behavior and released early. I hope to be in the free world soon. It drives me crazy every day. Is that the biggest need in my life? Absolutely not. But that's where I'm at. That's where my mind is. That's where my heart is. That's where this man's heart is. And we can't be surprised when we address felt needs if the immediate response is still extremely superficial. Because oftentimes when we're having these conversations with people, they don't realize, they don't recognize the need. Before I became a Christian, I didn't recognize the need. Yes, I knew I had sinned by other people's definitions, but hey, I'm capable of redefining that myself. And yes, I knew people expected that of me, but I didn't have any real felt need for it. I was happy. I had everything I wanted. I was doing everything I wanted to do. There was no real sense of soul sorrow. One thing, I was only 19 years old. I wasn't old enough to be that sorry yet. Oftentimes, we're not aware of the true need. And oftentimes, we have already learned really early to protect, to secure, and to hide that. So Jesus asked the most obvious question, do you want to be well? The man's response is typical of the kind of delusion we build around our truest needs. His response is simple. Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. While I'm coming, someone goes down ahead of me. You know what that is? That is simple, simple transference. Sir, I want to be well, but let me tell you who's at fault here. Let me tell you the ones I blame. For 38 years, I haven't been able to get myself into the water fast enough to be the one who wins the healing lottery of this magical pool, because no one will help me. You know what he's actually saying? Is I really actually enjoy the condition I'm in. I like the condition I'm in. And I just want to enjoy your attention while you feel sorry for me because I'm in this condition and other people put me in this condition. It's classic blame. It's classic transference. The problem is, he's not, of course, speaking to somebody who's going to buy into it. He's speaking unknowingly to the Son of God, who was actually at creation, who actually knew him, according to Scripture, before he was ever even born, before he was ever even conceived, and from that moment determined that this man was fearfully, wonderfully, remarkably made and had so much more potential beyond his physical body. Do you want to be well? Sure, I'd love to be well. If my boss would give me a raise, if I could get a promotion, if I could buy the house I want, if I could get out of this apartment, if I could finish up school, if I could get out of intermediate school, if I could get out of high school, if I could get out of college, if I get the next job, there's always somebody else that's wrong. And there's already something else that we need. And so when we invite people into life-changing relationships, we know we're entering into a relationship with them intentionally and on purpose, and we know that what we're going to hear first and what we're going to talk about first isn't the real need, but it is the access to the real need. Jesus looks at the man, and he actually, literally, this is Casey's words from a study you guys did a couple of weeks ago, he literally interrupts the conversation with an invitation. Jesus looks at the man in verse 8 and says, get up. Pick up your mat and walk. That's the invitation. Now, we don't know anything about this background. We don't know if this guy ever heard about Jesus. We don't know if he had heard the stories that Jesus had healed other people. But whatever it was about Jesus, there was enough authority, there was enough connection between him and the man that the man responds and says, okay. And it says in verse 9, instantly the man got up, picked up his mat, and started to walk. And life change began. He was invited into a life-changing relationship with Jesus and through one conversation that happened in that moment, and now he's beginning to experience life change. But stick with me for one more moment. Life change is not always easy and not always clean. And not always simple. It can get complicated. I mean, childbirth itself, new physical life, is a messy, complicated moment. Immediately, Jesus disappears in verse 10. It's the Sabbath day, and the religious police, the Jews, come, and they see the man who's healed, and they confront him. This is the Sabbath. The law prohibits you from picking up your mat. Now, let me just say this part academically. If you go to the Ten Commandments this afternoon in Exodus chapter 20, you will not find a commandment that says, do not pick up your mat on a Sunday. In fact, if you read all of the book of Exodus and then move into the legal documents of Deuteronomy, Numbers, Leviticus, you will never find where it says, don't pick up your mat on Sunday and walk. The religious police had devised that above and beyond the call of holiness that God had given. That's how religious police are. They are the lowest form of life on earth. Anybody that wants to dictate a suppression of your life on the basis and the founding of religion is just sick, and you should avoid them at all costs. Jesus is here to liberate and to set free. Immediately there's chaos. Immediately the man's caught in the chaos. Who is this guy that told you? He doesn't even know Jesus had got away before he even had a chance to find out who had healed him. But the man who was healed did not know who it was because Jesus has slipped away into the crowd. But here is one of the main reasons a church exists, in my opinion. Because life change can be chaotic and a little messy, we don't stop at life change. It's not just inviting others into a life-changing relationship one conversation at a time. This is not drive-by conversations where you have that conversation, tell them about Jesus, expect their life to be changed, expect them to suddenly have faith, and then we move on. not that at all. We're here for the long haul. We're here to help in the chaos, because that's the example Jesus gives. In verse 14, after this, Jesus found him in the temple. Jesus went back and found this guy again and said to him, see, you are well. You're completely well now, not just physically, but your soul is well. The eternal part of your spirit is well. And so Jesus looks at him and says, do not sin anymore so that something worse doesn't happen to you. You know, it's kind of amazing. It's kind of shocking. There are things worse than being disabled the entirety of your life. And what is worse, Jesus is perfectly clear, is being separated from God all of your life and all of eternity. It's a call to holiness. It's not just a restriction. Jesus is not doing the same thing the religious police did. He's not saying, okay, start following these laws. Jesus is saying, live with a passion for me. You're called now to be in relationship with me. You're called to holiness. And that is a process. And the church enables that process to take place. So yes, we're mobilized. We're going to leave here in just a few minutes. We will have the opportunity this week to invite somebody into a life-changing relationship with Jesus. It will happen because we're out where the people are. And we'll be more aware, we'll be more sensitive to the needs, and we'll listen, and we will reach out to the one who needs to know about Jesus. And we'll have the opportunity to share them what happened to us, and we'll have the opportunity to share what potentially can happen to them. And they'll experience life change. And they'll be made whole. And then they will begin a journey. A process of living that life out. And it'll get chaotic at times, and it'll get hard at times, and it'll get difficult at times. You've heard me say this before, but one of the biggest shocks I had after I became a Christian was a couple of weeks later when I immediately sinned exactly the way I had sinned before. I was absolutely horrified. I thought becoming a Christian made me perfect. And I found out I'm imperfect. That reminder happens on a daily basis. Still, 50 years later, I still get reminded I'm imperfect. But I know the consequences. I'm not afraid of losing my salvation and not having heaven. I know that's secure. Jesus took care of that for me. But I do want to live every day for him and for his glory and for his purposes. And that's going to take time, all the time. So why do we do exciting and beautiful weddings? Because we're here for all of life. Why do we do dinners after funerals when people are sad and grieving? Because your church is committed to you for the long haul. We will literally be here until the end. And then we will be together again in eternity in heaven. It may be one conversation that happens in a moment. It may be one conversation that happens over multiple moments in multiple venues and multiple conversations until that person says, yes, I will believe. I will pick up my mat and walk. And the conversation won't stop. Because every day we will learn how to be a disciple of Jesus, to not sin and not experience the consequences of disappointing the God who loves us so deeply and so much. Let's worship him. He changed our lives, and he lets us participate with others as they experience life change. Let's stand. Let's worship.